Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everyone, hello and welcome to the Divine It Girl Radio Show. I am your host, Jessica Nevins, joined by my lovely co-host.
Hey, it's Therese, everybody. Good morning.
And today we are so excited to bring you part two of our Invoking the Muse interview series, and we have with us today Dawn Kirkpatrick. Hello, Dawn.
Hello. How are you guys doing?
Very, very
fantastic.
Good. Welcome. We are so excited to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yes, yes. And I'm going to let our listeners know a little bit about you and so they understand your background. Dawn Kirkpatrick began life as a farm boy, but pictured himself performing music on a stage. This
I
visualization.
I'm reading the bio. You're reading the bio that my wife wrote while I was taking it out. I love it.
Yeah, I love that you had her write it.
Well, it's more a testament to my lack of typing skills.
Oh, is that it? So was
yeah,
it like
yeah,
dictation and she typed it out?
It was. She came up with the first sentence. This is speaking how the creative muse works. She came up with the first sentence, and then I was like, yeah, that's good. And then we kind of like, you know, sort of spitballed the rest of it together. But I interrupted you. I'm sorry. Go ahead and finish reading.
Okay, so this visualization became a reality when he moved to Los Angeles in the late 70s. He began playing the guitar at a young age, teaching himself initially through listening to old recordings. Throughout the last decades, Dawn has performed consistently worldwide and has written for publishing companies, other artists, and himself. The creative process has been an instinctive part of his performing and writing from the beginning, and he continues to embrace an innate knowing that creativity is intrinsically linked to spirit and heart-centered consciousness. Yay! That's a great bio. I love it.
Well, thank you to Julia Thornton, last week's guest, for the lovely closing sentence. It was very rousing. I thought she came up with that. That was great.
Yes, yes. Yes. Wow. Well, and for those of you listening out there that don't know this, we're going to make you in the know now, is that Julia, our guest from last week, Julia Thornton, she is actually married to Dawn Kirkpatrick. So it's a little fun fact for you. And they're in the one band, too. Imagine that.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Say that again.
I said, and they're in the same band, too. Imagine that.
Oh, yeah. Some people think of it as an amazing challenge, but we think of it as a gift, and it really is.
I would think of it as a gift, you know?
Absolutely. But you'd be surprised the number of people that, like, you know, one really good friend of ours, just every time we see her, she kind of goes, so you guys are together all the time, huh? And she just kind of pauses, and, you know, she kind of turns and looks at it sideways and goes, all the time, huh? No, not really, but, you know, she can't get her head around the fact that, like, people could do that.
And you enjoy someone's company.
Yeah,
you know?
And you know what? You get to create together, and you get to experience the experience of that being on the road thing together, which is really, really nice, because I spent a lot of my life being separated from my partners while I was on the road or my child and stuff, and so this is really great. You know, it's kind of like you have, it's hard being on the road, you know, you miss home, so it's kind of like we carry home with us in a way.
That's true. And
yeah,
really, I mean, I think that's kind of heart-centered living too, Dawn, you know. I think that creates that ability to be in the moment and not attached to the external so much.
Exactly. Very well put. Yeah, that's so true. And you know, it's interesting. Sometimes that ability to be in the moment makes it really, really have a flow. And there's other times where kind of like almost it will attract negative energy in a way, you know, in a very slight way, you know, like bad attitudes or something, or people kind of like, you know, get funny around us and stuff. And you kind of go, why is this, what's up with them? And then you kind of realize that they're responding in their own, with their own personal stuff to all the love energy they're around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Jess and I talk about this all the time. It's part of the, I call it the success cycle, but really I think it's part of living your authentic self is when you get in,
yeah.
when you're really living your authentic self, usually the first thing you get is pushback. You know, the
yeah.
loudest
yeah.
people are your critics. So it's a sign
yeah.
that you're doing it right, actually,
yeah.
if you get
we
that.
We try to take
it
that
it
way.
Right.
And we
yeah.
take it that way. And it's also an opportunity, I think, after a while, we start looking at it as like, hey, this is an opportunity to heal stuff, not only in ourselves, but the people that are coming towards us with this stuff. And I had a lot of opportunity with that on the road, like with the people, like being so kind of, you know, snarky and bad. And eventually I got confrontational about it. And then I realized, wait a minute, you know, and we really started talking. And suddenly it just blew the doors wide open on what was really going on. And we became very close, you know. So it was it was required to get us to sort of clean up that particular area of the group of us, you know. And there's just like, what, 90 of us that travel together. So it's like a traveling circus. So there's always opportunity.
Wow.
There's always opportunity there for that.
That's a big
bunch. You know, I never really thought of that because the, you know, the few shows that I've gone to, the concerts I've gone to, you know, you see the people on stage, but you never really consider all the people that are going with you that are working backstage too.
Oh, yeah. It's, if any, well, not if anything, it's always, there's more people that are not on stage than there are on stage. So it's
yeah.
an interesting dynamic. You know, there's a lot of people working really hard from like 7:30 a.m. to the moment we, you know, there are breaks, but to, you know, almost to the moment we hit stage. And then the minute we're done, they're right back at it. So it's amazing
yeah.
the synchronicity of how it works. We're lucky to have a really good production manager that just runs it like a very, very tight kind of like Patton's Army or something. You know, we can go into anywhere.
Yeah,
and
I've
just
seen
do
them
a
take
show.
Down a show. Yeah, they
yeah.
can take down a show fast. I mean,
yeah.
like 10 minutes fast.
Yep.
And these guys also, you know, we'll get booked for a gig like in Uzbekistan or something. And they can, you know, they figure out how to get that show there and up and, you know, we get there and get on stage and go, wow, you know, we're in the back of the beyond and we're doing a show. And it's kind of like just as together it is as when we do it like in, you know, at the Hollywood Bowl. So they, you know, they go uncredited. But, you know,
yeah,
it's a big part
do.
Of what the touring business is.
Well before we... And it just, okay. I just want to interject real quick before we get started. I just want to give our listeners the call-in number in case they want to call in. It is area code 347-855-8012, and we will be taking listeners later on in the show. So if you've called in already, I see we have a caller. Just hang in there. We will get to you. And also, you can chat with us live as well. So if you have questions, if you have comments, whatever, you can go to the chat and talk to us there, or you can call in, and we'll get to you later on in the show. But go ahead, Therese. You were about to ask a question. I just wanted to get that out before we get really deep into the show.
I love this. Jess is so efficient. I love it. I love having her here. It's always going to run smooth because she knows how to manage it. She's good like that.
It's too many. It's too many years of having to do it. To
no,
be.
I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you
it's
can tell you're. You can tell you were in band management, Maddie. You can feel it. You can totally just feel
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the true colors are coming out, aren't they?
Yeah. I was about to say, and she ran NBC Universal for a while, but.
No, that's really not true. But I was a band manager, so. And I managed artists for quite a bit. So Don is correct. It's a very interesting game. And you really, you know how you talk about it being like a living circus, like this moving circus going from city to city. It was the same way, and I was the ringleader. So it's
yeah,
like,
or...
you know, and I had my production managers and my tour managers and stuff, but it's like if I was not on point, then things would start to get a little shaky. And so I was always present to reining things in. And so, Therese, that's where
so
the
true.
Reining in comes from. I'm used to reining
in. No,
and
I love it.
Musicians.
And it always,
and,
it yeah. always is only as good as what's right at the top, you know.
Well,
and that's what. You know, that's why you were good at reining it in, and you understood that you could have all these production people under you, but it's only really as efficient, as good as you or yourself performing or creating.
Well, yeah, because if I don't show up, like, and I can be there, like, as a person, but if I'm not showing up and committing, like, in spirit, in me, then it's not. And it's the same thing for this show. You know, Teresa and I, like, bring all of ourselves to the show every week because we want to give our audience everything, you know?
Exactly.
So it's the same kind of thing. It's like, if you show up half-assed, you're going to get a half-assed result. You know?
And I think that's, you know, since this is about creativity and the muse and stuff, you definitely say that about when you're in the creative process too. I mean, I don't even know if you can be totally really in the creative process. I guess you can kind of, but, you know, you have to be 100% authentic and 100% present, I think, really, to be in the ultimate creative moment.
Absolutely,
yeah,
because the...
Yeah, go ahead, Chris. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that the only moment to create is in the now. You can't create in the past, and you can't create in the future. You can think about both, but you can't create there.
So it's kind of like what we were talking about the other day, as we talked about creativity and stuff, and yet, you know, your whole life is a creative act, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of us are lucky to create things and get to do that, but really we're all creative beings, and, you know, we create our lives. If we're awake.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I think being in that present moment is so key, because you can look at any profession, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a creative profession like a musician or a writer or a dancer or an artist. But you look at someone like a brilliant, like a Nobel Prize laureate that, you know, maybe in economics, there's still a lot of creativity that went into there because that person.
Oh, absolutely.
Really tapped into a way of thinking that the world
Absolutely.
Had never seen before, right? So that's creative process right there. Now, it might, to someone on the outside, they might just look at it and be like, wow, it's economics. That's a very linear, it's a very, you know, logical science. I view economics as a science, and I actually love economics. That's part of the geek side of me. I took all these classes last year. I took a class at Yale from this Nobel Prize laureate, and he was amazing. But I saw that creativity. I saw that creative genius in him. In such a, you know, like a, you know, linear subject matter. And I was kind of blown away by it, because I was like, wow, like, you don't normally make that association. And I think that's what we were talking about a little bit when we were all on the phone beforehand, talking about today, you know, and what we are going to approach. And I just really think that a lot of people out there think that they're not creative. And Therese, you had some really beautiful points about this yesterday. So I'd love it if you could just talk about that a little more, because I run into it too, where people will say to me, because they know, you know, I'm a writer, they'll be like, you know, that for those of you out there that know me as a coach, I'm also a fiction writer as well. So they'll say to me, oh, gosh, it's so great that you can write like that and that you wrote those books. Gosh, I'm not creative at all. And it's like, what? Yes, you are.
Yeah. Yeah. When we had a chance to have an amazing chat on the phone yesterday with Dawn, some stuff had come up where I was talking about the creative process, and I wanted to really, just for our audience, get the point across that when we're talking about creativity, it's not confined to the realm of the arts. And all three of us, Jess, Dawn, and myself, all have artistic abilities, and oddly enough, in different realms, too. So it was really kind of cool to talk because I was coming at it from an actress as a fine artist, a painter. And Dawn was coming at it from writing music. And also, I think you said you painted too, didn't you? Or no, that was, we were talking about...
Yes, when I was a child, I started off basically drawing and painting. And then I moved from that into, you know, like all kinds of other things, like models and you know, building my own things. And then, you know, a guitar landed in my hands. Actually, my sister started playing the guitar, and I was really annoyed that she could do it so well. So I took it up, you know. I was like, okay, she can do that. I definitely can do it. And that was terrible at it, but I stuck with it, you know, and she just got bored with it because it was effortless for her. So once the guitar landed in my hands, I stopped all that other stuff. But I threatened to get back to them any day.
So the creative realm of music, of writing music and playing music, and then Jess was representing writing and dancing in the creative realm. So we all have this perspective from the quote-unquote, you know, art realm. And we were talking about creativity. And we started to throw in there other ways that we're creative, because in truth, we're creative beings. That is just our nature. That is, you know, how they say, like, we're made in the image of God, if you believe in God or source or what, doesn't matter what you say, but that's how we're made in the image, that the ultimate creator created us, and we're little creators creating all the time. And I feel that sometimes when people hear the word creation, they can tend to generalize it and make it just about artistic creativity. And we were talking about how the creative muse can strike anywhere. And we were taking it to the level of, you know, even raising children is an art form. And it really and truly is. You know,
possibly
because it requires
the highest art form.
I think so. Because there's this understanding, part of creativity, and I know that Jess and Don can attest to this, but part of creativity is understanding that we are not the ultimate source that the creative energy is coming through. We're co-creating it. We're a conduit for source to work through. It would be like, instead of thinking we're the artist, we're the paintbrush that the artist is holding.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
That's a good analogy. I noticed for me, through the years I was writing, the more I became aware of that, the better it got. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think when I started off, I was just kind of banging out stuff just because, oh, that sounds cool. But then the more I realized I was connecting to something bigger than me, it opened up the flow, you know, and wow, you know, suddenly it seemed, you know, the music was so much more authentic. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's the key. That's one of the keys that when we get that as individuals, that cracks life open for us, just like you talked about. That's when you get into the flow, when you realize that the creative energy isn't stopping with our mind, which is small in comparison to what we could connect to if we let ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. To connect to, like you say, the light or source or something like that, it's just, yeah, you know, it's a cliche to say this, but it's inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so no wonder that happens, you know, people pull things out of the air like that, because you really, you know, you're connected with everything that's universal.
So I wanted to ask you, Don, in your own process, and I think we touched on this yesterday. Oh, man, there's a question that I know that I'm supposed to ask you and you have a juicy answer for. It'll come. But one of the ways that I have never been really artistically creative is in writing music. And I remember saying to you yesterday, I was like, well, what does that feel like? What is that? I mean, and I want to hear your answer again, because it was kind of an aha moment for me, because I made it so foreign in my head. So go ahead.
forgive me, because it kind of cut out for a second. I've lost what say the beginning part of the question again, what we were talking about.
Oh, sure. I wanted you to share with everybody what it feels like to write music.
Oh.
Because when we were talking about it, something that you said made it feel so much more accessible than how I had pictured it in my own head, that it was a different process.
I see.
So I'd love to hear you describe it.
Okay, well, I don't know if this is going to be what I was saying yesterday, but I'll just try and get back into the vibe of that. Gosh, it's been different through my life, you know, but it started off and it's ended up the same. You just feel it sort of channeled through you, you know, I do nowadays. I just feel like kind of like, you know, you get kind of an itch. You know, I've heard, you know, people that write books, talk about this, and I heard Steve Martin say this somewhere. He said it's kind of like, you know, eating or sex. You just kind of get a feeling that you might want to do that, and then all of a sudden you're doing it. And that, to me, that's what writing's like. You kind of just have a feeling.
True.
Like,
I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, I thought it was such a great. He said it so much better than I did. And it, of course, because it was him, it was somewhat humorous too. But there's a real truth to that. You just kind of get this feeling, and then bang, you know, suddenly there's an instrument in my head. Or a lot of times I've been out, like, just walking, and I'll just start to hear stuff. And it happens that way.
Ah, yeah. You know, I've heard Tom Waits describe it that way. I remember hearing...
What did he say?
He said that he would be... That he talks to it now because it would be... It was something would happen, like he'd be driving down the road and a song would come. It was like,
yeah.
It was like he'd be driving along and it was like this other entity would come by and the song would start playing. And he would be like, okay, I cannot capture you right now, but I want you. Can you come back later? I mean, I'm paraphrasing here. But, and sometimes, maybe, I think he said most of the time it did come back.
That's
but
exactly
he had
what,
to actually communicate
exactly what
to
it's
it.
Like. God
yeah.
bless Tom Waits, because he always gets it so right. It's exactly what it's like. I remember I was out, like, hiking in these hills up above the ranch we have, and I'm stomping along down the hill because it's very steep. It's like bang, bang, bang. And all of a sudden this melody pops in my head and I'm like going, whoa, what is that? And this whole thing just appeared in my mind. I could hear it like completely. But I realized it was connected to my footsteps. I'm like, I've got a long ways till I'm home. I've got to remember this. So then I started singing it in bits and pieces along with my stomping all the way home. And finally I get, you know, home, there's a guitar. I played in the iPhone, you know, with the feet still stomping and stuff. And, you know, it turned into a song, you know, that is actually on a recording and stuff like that. But it's interesting. You kind of say, okay, I got to remember this, you know, stick around. Don't go just yet, you know.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's one of the ways, you know. Other ways, you know, you hear like Sting talk about having, as I think I mentioned, he dreamt all of Every Breath You Take, woke up and wrote it down. You know, Keith, you know, woke up with Satisfaction riff in his head, stuff like that. And that's happened to me too. But like I said yesterday, my songs aren't as good as those. So when I dream them, so.
Well, and I think it's interesting that, you know, along the different media, and I'm talking artistic media, regardless of what it is, there are things that you are definitely gifted for. Because what's interesting is, you know, me being a writer, I've tried to write songs. I used to when I was like a teenager and I was in a band. And then it just kind of evaporated as I got older. But what did take over was this long format writing, you know, that enabled me to become a novelist. But it's
right.
The same process. My characters talk to me occasionally about a storyline, like about something that's going on. It's like, oh, wait, that's good. Can you hang on for a minute so I can, like, grab my phone? And, you know, there are a lot of times where it would come where I was driving, right? So I'd grab my phone and I'd hit, like, the voice notes and I'd just talk it in so I wouldn't lose it.
Wow.
And another thing that I was telling one of my clients is she's a writer, and so part of the coaching is the creative process, and I was talking about how I tend to write my ideas down on Post-its, and when I was getting ready to do my rewrite, I had a whole, like, seriously, one of the biggest poster boards you could find. It was all covered in Post-its.
Wow.
And I was like, I remember because I just kept on taking a Post-it and like stacking them one on top of the other and not really paying attention to the volume of what was coming in until I had to arrange them. And I was like, whoa, okay, there's my story. But it's interesting because when it comes to music, what I found easier for me was being in the studio as an arranger.
Yeah, everybody has, you know, an area. And I also think it's just, you know, it's all what shape the form takes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's either short form writing or there's lyric writing, which is real different than poetry, you know, because it has to sound good with the music. And, you know, it depends on, some people are good and can jump around forms. You kind of get, you know, facility in each form. I know people that, you know, write, I mean, God, look at somebody like Patti Smith, who, mm-hmm. you know, writes great lyrics and wrote, you know, a book that won, I believe, the Pulitzer Prize, something like that, the New York
yeah.
Times Best Book of the Year Award. You know,
exactly.
So they can work in many forms. That's kind of, to me at this point in life, that's kind of exciting to be able to have more than one form to be able to express like I'm able to when I play music.
Well, yeah, because it's almost like you have to push the envelope on yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's that expansion, and I know that when we were talking the other day, we were talking about, you know, as human beings, we have to get ourselves to the point where we keep expanding so that we can accommodate whatever spirit wants to move through us. But if we are stunted in our expansion process, it can limit what we are able to channel through.
Yeah,
so there's
yeah, this
almost this constant pushing the envelope, like expanding your gifts, you know, it's interesting
to
see how that happens.
Yeah, and it's one of the definitions that they talk about people who are true artists, you know, like somebody like David Bowie, who was always shifting, changing, trying new things, you know, that's one of the things, somebody who's always kind of pushing it. But I think, you know, we as human beings, you can get very comfortable. And
mm-hmm.
yes.
You know, it's mm-hmm. in all things in life, you can say this about raising children too. You know, you've always kind of got to be looking around the corner or being present enough to see, you know, okay, what's new, you know, so that my child doesn't get bored at this moment and start screaming. You know, it's like, it's all kind of the same thing in a weird way.
And children definitely challenge you to be present. Because
yes,
as soon as you check out, man, they're right there. They are
yeah.
right there getting into something to
that's
keep
so
you,
true.
to draw you back into the moment.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously when my daughter was young, I didn't write very much then, you know. It was like it was all about her, you know, when I was home. And it was great because she's very bright and she just snapped you into present moment awareness before you even knew it, you know. It's like a roller coaster ride, but the best one possible. You know.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of people, and definitely people that are connecting to the show, one of the things that they're noticing, I mean, we have a lot of people who connect to this show that are in a transitional place, even if it's just emotionally, where they're realizing that they need something that's bringing them present. Because if you're working in, let's say, a job that you're doing just to bring in income, but you're totally not connected to it. You've kind of gone offline, if you will. You're just kind of
yeah.
going through the motions every day. And our audience is definitely more awake and desires, you know, that need for present connection, for
yeah.
that creativity. And one of the things that I wanted to kind of bring up is, as you were talking about that process of writing your song, and I noticed this for me in my creative endeavors, whether it's working on art or if it's just I need to get present somewhere in my life, is getting out in nature does it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if I need to get connected, sometimes I need to actually just get outside. And I just wanted to point out, because you were talking about going on this hike and then the beat came to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was wondering if, I mean, I'm sure you were aware that there was something in being in nature, like you were connecting presently with...
Oh, absolutely. It was the main reason I go walking through the hills is to absolutely connect with, as you would say, spirit or the light. It happens almost, you can't help but not have it happen, you know, these days. It's thick,
absolutely.
You know, but I'm lucky I could take a hike out in the middle of nowhere. You know, it's like, it's really easy to connect that way when there's like absolutely zero people around for about, you know, 12 miles away. But,
yeah.
you know, you can do it. You know, I did it many years just in the corner of a bedroom in a little studio too. You know, it helps. I can't say that it's any one thing, but it helps to be in nature. But sometimes if you're inspired, you can point your guitar into the corner of a wall and record something right there and go, that's amazing, you know, that's inspired. But definitely connecting with nature is a, at this point for me, is a big thing, and I find it very inspiring.
Well, and part of it, I think, is we had talked about this, we touched on it yesterday a little bit, but part of the creative process in anything is to get away from it. And we were joking about this because I have two small children. I have a little girl who's almost 5 and a little boy who's almost 1. And I was out walking yesterday when I was talking to Jessica and Dawn. And so I made a joke that I needed, you know, it was my me time, that I needed to get away. And we all laughed because we all understood that getting away sometimes from what you love, even if you're, like, so involved in doing it, it's one of the best things you can do for the process.
Absolutely.
Yeah. For the creative process, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I saw it over the years making albums. It is so glaringly obvious. You know, there's famous stories about, you know, artists that got way, way, way too inside of it and didn't pull away to get perspective, you know, like Fleetwood Mac on their third album, things like that are famous stories. But, you know, many times you'd be working with a group of people or just yourself, and after a while you'd go, this is going nowhere. But, you know, probably it had been going nowhere for the last 10 hours. But, you know, suddenly you realize it and you step away from it and come back and, you know, hopefully there's some more clarity. Or, like, I think the example I use, I was telling you about a friend that I have, who she's a healer and she's into all sorts of different modalities and stuff. But she's also got a very real-world kind of product that she's created, which is really cool and unique. But there's a lot of science involved in it, in actually having it, you know, be able to, I guess, have shelf life or be able to be out in the world. And so she's dealing with that, and she said she just hit a wall. And I said, well, like, you know, sometimes when you're writing or you're in the middle of like a project and stuff, we step away from it, you know. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, okay, maybe I'll try that. So, you know, she went home, and I think about a month later, she said, yeah, I told her, just stare at the wall, do anything, but don't be thinking about what this is. This thing you're working on. She wrote back a really sweet, like, email saying, I did it. I spent the last week just staring at the wall, and now all of a sudden I'm having all kinds of breakthroughs with this product. So that was gratifying to hear that. And it kind of, you know, kind of shows what, you know, how that can work. You do need that. I think the word is balance, isn't it? You need the balance.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, Jess, you can speak to this in terms of business development or just entrepreneurship. Right? I mean, you've had this experience in creating that. I mean, share that a little bit, because it really is like part of the just the bigger process of how we build something, whether it's a song, a painting, a business. This is part of that process.
Yeah, process is a good word. It really is, in, you know, sort of an integral part of what we do when we create. It is a process. Yeah, I mean, it can be divine inspiration, just blast out, but a lot of times it's the process.
And the process, you know, about the whole entrepreneur road goes hand in hand with creativity. You really have to be comfortable with embracing that. And it is, you know, I was doing an interview series back in August, and we were talking about success and how success doesn't really look linear. It looks like a squiggly line. It goes up, it goes down, it goes this way, it goes that way. It is not, it's the total antithesis of coloring within the lines. It is so far out of the lines at times that you're like, what? And building a business can have the same effect as like you guys were talking about, where you are so in love with it that you get to a point where you hit the wall and you know you have to step back. I mean, I'm in that now. You know, my business is going to a different level now. So I've had to, in the past week, really step back. And it looked like me doing a lot of nothing. And it looked like, you know, me spending time with dear friends and reconnecting with nature and going to the beach and going for walks, you know, around the neighborhood and looking at all the beautiful trees and flowers. And it's still, and I'm still in that place. but I feel like the, you know, like the door is starting to open again. And the downloads are starting to come in again, but they're trickles. So I know that there's still more internal work to be done. And it's that part I was talking about earlier about expanding your vessel to accommodate the newness that's coming in, because it's bigger. It's something you haven't experienced before. So in order to make it a little less traumatic, because it can be really uncomfortable, really, really uncomfortable. So it can crack you wide open, and that's kind of what happened last week, where I was like, oh, what is this? And now it's starting to like, okay, I'm starting to like figure it out. But I find that this happens a lot with businesses, and I find that this happens with my clients too, is that they hit a wall and that they think that there's something wrong. But actually, there's nothing wrong. It just means
that happens.
It's time to go somewhere else. It's time to go to a new level.
You just described songwriting. Seriously. It's exactly like that. It's like, wow, this is like going nowhere. This sucks. This sounds terrible. And all of a sudden, you'll just turn a corner. Somebody will get up and go get a bottle of water and walk back and go, this. And we all go, yes, that's it, that's it. You know, and mm-hmm. you're off, you turn the corner and you're off and running on the thing that finishes the song. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, in painting I call it the awkward teenager stage. So a painting goes through through a process where you have your concept, your idea, and you're in love with it, and you sketch it out and you're like, yep, that's it. That's what it's gonna be. It's gonna be good. You start filling it in and it looks good, and then it hits a point where you're like, this is ugly, I've totally effed it up, and I have to walk, it's like I'm going to scrap it. There's this part of you that wants to just totally bail, and this other part of you that's like, nope, I'm just going to walk away. I'm going to walk away right now. And I have paintings right now that are sitting there in that stage, and I walk past them, and I look at them, and I know it's not time yet when I look at them, and I still feel frustrated. What usually happens is I'll be staring at it, just kind of like maybe lost in thought doing something else, and I suddenly start to see it painting itself. Like it's showing me, now add color here, now fill this in, now this is what it needs. And sometimes I only get a step or two more, and it's still awkward, but it's better. I have one that's like that right now. Yesterday I added one more color, and it was like, nope, that's better, but it's still awkward.
I don't know about you guys, but I love to read about, like, other artists' process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many books written about, like, people writing. You know, there's a whole book about people, how they write things, you know, where they interview Stephen King, all these writers and stuff, and their process, when they get them to do it. And there's a lot of books written about painters, you know, and people painting, because I love art. So you kind of figure out their process and composers and stuff. And what you just talked about painting seems to be, like, the quintessential process for a painter. You know, you read about how many times Picasso would, like, scrape down, you know, the initial painting and sort of start it over. You know, when they investigate these things, they see the artists have done it three times till they got the one that they liked. You know, it's,
mm-hmm.
you know, how many awkward teenager phases they went through and stuff like that.
Oh,
that's fascinating.
Yeah. And I've taught art classes to people before, especially beginners, and they all have this pain. It was interesting because I realized I wasn't teaching them so much the art as how to be with it, because they would come with so much hope and joy and be working and enjoying it, and then they'd hit the wall hard and like, I mean, sometimes in tears, you know. It's just a class, it's just a one painting, but to them it was like, I failed. And it's like, no, this is the midway point. You know, and sometimes at the midway point, it can look like failure and disaster, but really it's not even, it's the middle of the creation.
And it's funny, it sounds like, you know, you also read a lot of artists say this, but, you know, what I just heard you talking about was really like a person's journey. So much of art is about a journey of self-discovery, isn't it? You know, the art, and the art comes out of that journey of self-discovery.
Yes.
You know, suddenly you realize, oh, you know, this thing about me is blocking me here, and, you know, you work on that, and suddenly you're massively creative again.
And I
found that to be true of myself in a lot of things. You have to trust the universe, too, like what Jess is saying. You kind of have to trust the universe that, you know, these left corners and stuff you got to get around will be up there further up the road. Sometimes it seems like you can't see it, but, you know, I really think a big part of being creative is just learning how to trust.
Mm-hmm. It is, and I just, you know, what dawned on me as we're talking about this is how the creative process looks, it mimics the lifespan of a human being. In the beginning, it's all joy and idealism. It's like, yay, this is going to be fun. Childhood right there, right? Everything's possible. And then there's that awkward stage where it feels like it's failing.
Great,
like,
now we're in awkward teenage years.
Yeah.
Pain, right? Exactly. So we've got joy, then it goes into pain. And then what happens is when you mature and you become an adult, you have both together. Because it's really interesting. When you finish the painting, at least from my perspective, when I finish a painting, there's always that little bittersweet feeling to it. I still remember the pain. And I still have this feeling of, like, this isn't perfect or it's not what I saw in my head. But I appreciate it and I love it anyway. But I still sense the pain underneath it and then the pure joy mixed together, and that's maturity. That's really interesting.
Boy, that's a great analogy. I think the show's over. I think we just summed everything up.
Thank you very much for listening.
Great.
I'm kidding. But when you say that is the creative process, it is a microcosm of the macrocosm. I mean, I love how the universe does this. They make patterns everywhere. Okay, so the truth, any truth, any universal truth will show up as a pattern and it'll repeat in different ways. And you just have to see where the pattern is. And I really, truly feel like what we just touched on with the lifespan and the creative process, they look the same. You know,
absolutely.
You need
I mean, it's like, the saying is, you know, your life is your creation. And you create your life. It's, you know, it's almost become a cliche in today's world, but it's really, really a basic truth.
Yeah.
And you know, art mirrors. Art is just, what do they say? Art is just a reflection of who we are. And that kind of what you just said says that.
Yeah. And the fact that, I mean, we talk about success a lot on the show, and that we use it in a broad term, but in that process, you know, there are a lot of quotes and memes out there in social media, and I love them. But they're always talking about how failure is part of success. You can't have success without failure.
That's true. You've got to have balance. It's the yin and yang of life, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's true. Well, how do you know what success is without failure? You know, that's the one. It's a very Tao question to put out there. But, you know, it's true. It's the spectrum. I mean, I think that's part of why it comes in the middle. Because you start with all this, you start with this beautiful idea that's full of potential. And then you need to know what the lack of it looks like. And then it moves you into having it. I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of working this out in my brain right now, but that's what it feels like to me.
Well, I'm still stuck back there on that, the metaphor about life and art and stuff. I really do kind of feel like you just completely summed everything up. I'm kind of like, you know, okay, that's it.
Well, I think, well, what we're really interested in hearing about, you know, is your process, your way through it. Because one of the things we touched on when we had a chance to chat yesterday was how you are living the life that you love. You're not doing a job that's disconnected from your passion. You're very connected to your passion, and you're making a living at it. And, you know, our audience definitely wants to hear that process, how you got into that, how you allowed that to keep flowing in your life.
Man, what a question. There's so many ways to answer that. I've had so many different feelings about what the answer to that is in the course of my life. Sometimes I felt like I was, at the bottom of the line, I guess I feel like I'm blessed, you know, and I also feel like that I came into this life with some kind of dharma that was meant to be this way. And I also know that somehow, at some point very young, I set an intention to do this in my life. I just saw it. I literally just saw it. And I've been lucky enough, you know, along the way to be able to realize it and live it. And also, I think timing, you know. I came up at a time in the music business when it was much easier than it is now. So I was fortunate in that way, too. And I think I was just born to be into art, you know. Every day, I just managed to find my way around artists my whole life. My first wife was an artist, you know. She went to college in, up in the Bay Area and was master of fine art. And I was immediately thrown in this world of artists, comedians and musicians, and, you know, it was kind of the late 70s, so there's always people around like that. It's not like what it is nowadays. Those people seem scant. So I've been lucky in that my path has kind of been that way. Obviously, there was a lot of hard work, you know. I made strong choices at times. It seemed crazy, but, that, you know, like I was telling you about how I kind of working in clubs and stuff so that I could get myself more into what I really wanted to do, which is to be more of an artist and record and, you know, maybe make albums and things like that. And so I just quit everything and moved to L.A. and practiced for a year and made sure I could, you know, be the kind of person that could record on any session ever, you know, and sort of master my craft. So, you know, it's a combination of those things. I don't think there's any one way, you know. I mean, I don't know how to answer that. It's not like, you know, it's not like I went to medical school and then I got a job as an intern and then became a doctor. But in kind of in a way, it is, too.
It kind of is, yeah.
It is, so.
Because I think that there is a level of paying your dues. And by paying your dues, I'm talking about you make a commitment and you stay true to that commitment that you've made to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And so you pay your dues in that way, and you do whatever it takes, you know, and like you did with the whole club thing where you decided to leave that in order to go the artistic route. That was a commitment that you made despite everything going on externally, despite critics, despite, you know, maybe naysayers around you saying, why are you doing that? You've got this great thing going on at the clubs, and it takes a whole lot of heartfelt commitment. At least that's been my experience.
Yeah, I was lucky. I grew up around that, you know, growing up on a farm. It's always, every year is an act of faith because, you know, the crop is really in the hands of God, weather, et cetera. And I had a really good example. I just grew up knowing that kind of process. You know, I think it was in my lineage, to be honest with you. I came from, you know, like, Quakers and things like that, were very sort of spiritual-based people, and I think it just kind of in me, you know, and it was in my dad, too, you know, that thing of just, you know, knowing what your internal compass is and really sticking to it regardless of whatever and trusting and having, you know, faith.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, boils down to, like you were saying, paying your dues.
Yeah. It's funny because I remember thinking that paying your dues was like you have to work so hard and you have to do this and that. I was looking at the external personification of it and not really understanding what it was really about. And what it really boils down to is trust and faith in yourself and your journey, your path, your commitment to what you're here to do, your commitment to your purpose. And it requires a tremendous amount of trust and faith. Tremendous.
Yeah. That's why, the, you know, we talked a little bit about that book, The Artist's Way, the other day. You know, there's so much of this idea in that book. And, God, you know, I can't remember when she wrote that. It was the 70s or something. It's a great guidebook for this kind of attitude, I think. You know, and I was exposed to a lot of attitude, luckily enough, you know, being around artists. It just, you know, sort of gave me that veneer. And I've been lucky, too. I have to say I've been very lucky, you know. It's you know, and what is luck? Opportunity, you know, being preparedness meeting opportunity at the right moment. I've definitely made sure I was prepared, but when the opportunity was there, you know, I jumped on it, and I was lucky to have some opportunities come up like that. It has felt oddly guided along the way, too, but I imagine a lot of people would say this about the process of being an artist, you know, and being in the field of art, of any kind of artistic endeavor.
I think that you made some really good points, though, about that part of the process about getting what you want is having faith about it. You know, that there's so much that you can do to build it, but then there is this giving over, you know, the giving over to something bigger than yourself.
Absolutely.
And, you know, one of the things that my guides, my spirit team talks to me about is how they were like, imagine that we're in a car together, they said. And part of the problem is you're trying to drive. We're the driver, you're the navigator. So you tell us where to go, and we're going to get you there. Stop trying to grab the wheel. Do your part is what they, you know, they're asking, is that, you know, you hold the map and you look at, you're looking at it and you're making those decisions, and then trust that we'll drive you there.
Exactly.
Which is a great metaphor. And it was, they were, you know, kind of, my guys are very tongue in cheek sometimes, but it was about control, because a lot of the times when we're building something, there's this urge to try and control the situation.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to force it into being. You can't force a song into being.
No. Nothing you can't. I take this down. I'm lucky because I get to do kind of all kinds of different facets, whether it's recording or playing live on stage. And like, when we play with Rod, there's very few moments where you're really, like, really, really improvising. But there's, like, one or two, and I got, and because I've done the gig so long, I started playing with the idea of this moment. And you know, I had spoken to a healer, and she said to me, we were talking about life, she goes, you know, she knew I was a musician, she knew a lot about music, she goes, why don't you live your life the way you play solo? And I was like, whoa! Oh, my God, that, I never thought of that. That's, oh, yeah, I never know quite what I'm going to play next, but when I do, I really commit to it, and that kind of thing. So I kind of did that, you know, it changed the way I looked at a lot of the moments in life that maybe were difficulties, or something like that, or just like, what's happening, what's going on, you know. So then I flipped it around, I'm like, okay, I've got this tiny little moment to play, why don't I just, you know, let go of everything, and just play it that I've been trying to live my life, and just completely, like, I got to where I would try and just empty my mind, and just literally jump off the edge of a cliff, because it's very exposed, it was like me and two other instruments, and you're in front of a large group of people, so it's a great cliff to jump off of. And so I would take that creative moment, however short it was, and just try to be completely open, not plan out where it was going, take my hands kind of, you know, a bit off the wheel, and just let almost the moment guide me, you know, and just be try to be present moment from moment to moment until it was over. And sure enough, when I started doing that, people, like, you know, would go, whoa, what were you doing tonight? That was, you know, cool. Or even Rod would go, I don't know how you do that. And I was like, what? I wasn't even awake. Where was I? What's going on? You know, I was that in the moment of it. But it is kind of like, again, it's trust. It's letting go. It's like being present moment awareness. It's all the, you know, it's all the greatest hits.
Yeah, and also vulnerability as well, because in that moment, especially, I mean, and we get to feel this when we're on stage. That's one of the areas that I feel, being a stage actress and being connected to an audience, first of all, nobody can, it's kind of amazing, because when you're on stage, it's like they can smell the truth, okay?
They can.
They
smell fear and they smell the truth.
They can,
completely.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
They know
so
when you're being authentic, and they know when you're not, and it's just, and the thing is, it doesn't matter if there, because there's a group consciousness happening, okay? So it's like multiple consciousnesses connecting together. And, man, it is like being under a magnifying glass. You really, if you try to phone it in.
If it all aligns, it's an incredibly powerful feeling. I remember after those moments when I was really kind of getting to the point where I could dial in, you know, I'd almost like meditate right before I'd play, and then I'd play it. And it felt so, I could feel the power of all the consciousnesses coming together for a moment. You can
really feel it
because it was so
in
exposed.
In your heart. You can feel it in your heart chakra. In fact, I'm like, I'm checking into that feeling of When you know you're present and you're authentic, I felt this hum of energy circulating the room, and it goes right into your core. It goes right into your heart. And you just know it. You know when they're with you on the same page because you've got this feeling. And then you know when you're disconnected because it feels just awful. It feels so isolating and awkward.
Yeah, particularly for an actor and actress, too, that's such an exposed profession. I so admire it because it's like it's really a high wire act. The only thing worse would be a comedian, I think. But, you know, it's like at least I'm up there with a few people, but I get that thing of being that exposed and having to be that brave. And yet when you connect with everybody, it's like universal heart consciousness you're connecting into, which is kind of why we've all come here, I think. To be in that consciousness.
One of the key points in my training, because I went to college, I went to a 4-year arts college and got my degree in acting. And one of the key points was, you know, vulnerability, meaning the willingness to fail. Like the whole point when you get on stage was to be willing to fail. Like go all the way in, go 100% in. It could land and you could totally miss and fall on your face, but that is more real and authentic and can still create a connection. And it never really happens. You never really fail when you go all in. Even
That's
if
true.
You miss
really
your
true.
Mark, you don't fail. So many
times I would play the wrong note in those moments where I was going all in. I would play completely the wrong note, but because I was in the moment, somehow I just like it went back to the right place, or I just made it part of the right place, you know, as you do in life.
Exactly. And it's really when you're holding yourself back, that's the true failure. That's where the disconnect happens. That's where this awkward moment happens where everyone's like, I don't get you. I don't get it. because they can tell that you're holding a piece of yourself back, and then they become suspicious in a way. They're like, why are you doing that? And the truth is, it's like that in life, too. I love that
bit about art, though, because you can see it in acting. I hear it in music all the time. You can hear it when people or see it, when people are kind of holding back a little bit, you know, like a really great actor or something. I find it fascinating to watch somebody like Jack Nicholson, who has just been the best that can be and also has just completely walked through things. And, you know, for me, it's fascinating to watch them when they're kind of walking through stuff or they're not being 100% authentic. It's like, God, look at that. Look how close, what a master it could be and how close it can just be crap. You know, I think that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. As it is with life, you know. I mean, people that are so close to, you know, living a brilliant, authentic life and yet aren't quite there, and then you meet them 10 years later and you're like, wow, you did it. You're amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, this is, I think it's a universal truth. I mean, it's, part of it is this willing to be vulnerable is part of this bigger process that we're talking about. There has to be this willing to put yourself on the line. Because even though you talk about how you were very supported growing up and it was all around you, you still had to put yourself out there. It wasn't handed to you. It wasn't like, okay, well, you get to play music now professionally all around the world. That gets to be your thing. It was within your realm of reach, but you still had to reach for it, which meant that there still was this possibility of not getting it.
Well, that was being, again, I credit that to watching my father farm. You know, every year there was a possibility. He had to reach every year because there was always a major possibility there would be no crop. You know, so that sort of ethic, that ethos, that intent, was like just everywhere in my life from the moment I had consciousness, and I have to give him a lot of credit for that, and you know his mother and the people that came before me, you know, it is kind of a pioneer, you know, the people that moved from east to west across this country, they're kind of a pioneer spirit, being an artist in a way if you really commit to it.
That's a great point. You know, and not coming from a farming background, it's really illuminating actually to hear that, because I don't really think of, you know, I didn't really think of that process, but that's amazing. I mean, it does
really
require.
You know, in, in many ways, and I said this at his like funeral wake thing we had, his basically party, because we are Irish.
Irish, yeah.
So
I get it.
After I played some music, I got him spoke, and I realized it was one of those moments where the words are coming through you, they're coming from, you know, the light or something. And I was listening to myself speaking, and I go, all of a sudden I realized I'm describing somebody who's an artist. You know, the faith he had, the way he lived amongst the trees he was farming, and the way that he would not push them too much, but he would kind of nurture them, and he had those left corners like we're talking about, and something would come up. You know, all the creative process within every year that he grew olives. And so I realized all of a sudden I go, wait, my dad was an artist. I'm talking about an artist here. So I said that, but it hit me at that moment, you know, that he had lived a life as an artist, even though it was a very basic kind of farmer. And I think farmers are in a real way, a real spiritual being. It's a real deep, deep commitment you have to yourself and the land and what you're creating, you know, what you're growing.
I think you just made a huge point, which is that you can be an artist in any way. You can turn anything into an art form. Accounting, you can turn it into an art form.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take it to the complete opposite end of the spectrum. I was playing with a band, and they had investors in them, and one of the investors was a woman, her husband, and he was a brain surgeon, a world-renowned brain surgeon from Dallas. And really cool guy. We hit it off instantly. Very young, very successful. He let me go into the operating, you know, theater, as it is called, even for brain surgery, and watch. And you know, he's doing stuff on screens, and I instantly realized he's doing exactly what I do, except he's got somebody's life in his hands. But he's doing exactly what I do when I do like a recording session. He's thinking on three different levels simultaneously. He's thinking about the person that he's working on. He's thinking about where, you know, if he's alive or if he's not, how this is going to affect this thing, what it might sound like or look like if he makes this move in this guy's brain or if he mm-hmm. doesn't. And, you know, he's being guided. And you know, we talked about it for many, many months. I was so fascinated by this. He was a total artist. He'd be like me playing that solo. He wouldn't remember any of it. He was totally guided. He was always in the moment. And he had to be, because you're dealing with people's lives. And he would he knew. He thought of it. It's completely an art form, what he was doing. And yet he was dealing, you know, as opposed to like growing olives, he was dealing with a life in real time moment, you know. And yet he thought very artistically. You know, as we do, he was conscious of stuff, and yet he was very unconscious and out of his body at the same time, and being in the moment. You know, it was amazing. It was an epiphany to me to go, my God, that guy is not only a world-renowned surgeon, he is an artist. And through other experiences I've had with doctors, I've seen very much that kind of thing too.
You make such a good point about that. There is this moment, right, when you have finished. Or you, maybe not finished, but when you've done the creative process and you come out of it, if you really were connected, if you were really co-creating, there is like a, like you can't remember it. You can't articulate it. You can, you know, maybe you get to experience the byproduct, like, you know, as a painter, I get to experience the byproduct by seeing the finished piece. But as far as how I did it when I was in there, that's why I kind of detest trying to recreate something I've already made, because I can't do it. I mean, I can try.
But
just like performing live on stage, it's like if you have a great performance one night, that was it. I mean, you can you can't redo it. It'll be a new version, and it'll be different. Because of so many factors that we can't contribute, but one of the big ones is that you're connecting live. It's a live connection.
Absolutely.
It's like we're talking live on the radio right now. There's a live connection that goes on between you and spirit. And what you get in that moment is unique to that moment.
And you, I think you asked me yesterday, like, what's it like to go back and look at some of those things? You know, because or the artist you were at that time, you know, and it's interesting, but it's like, you know, it's like flipping, I thought about that more after we talked about it, and to me it's a little bit like flipping through a photo album. You have some really fond memories, and it evokes, you know, some strong feelings, but it's always like, I'm more interested in the one that hasn't happened yet, that's ahead of me, you know, because that's where the true inspiration and the in-the-moment lies, and the real, real, you know, full consciousness, full, complete living happens. So, it's, you know, it's fun, but it's much better to be able to still do it, you know, thank God, touch wood.
Well, and that's a good point that you bring up, because that's part of the detachment process, right? Isn't it? If you're going to have future success, like, okay, if tomorrow's success, you have to detach from today's.
Yeah.
In order for tomorrow to really have a chance to thrive and be a success. Otherwise, if we're trying to just recreate, we're not, again, that goes into a place where we're not being authentic, we're not living in the moment. We're like, that was the best I could do, so I'm going to try and manufacture that over and over again. That's manufacturing instead of creating, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And, you know, God, come on, we all do it. I mean, at least in the music business.
Oh, my gosh,
so much of that. You know, we all do it, but, you strive for that moment where it is like what you say.
Yeah, and I definitely agree. I mean, I think that it's part, again, because we keep going back to process. You know, we're talking about the fact that, you know, some people look at outcome or product or a goal, right? And they're like, that's the thing. That's what I'm trying to do. And what we are moving into, and I think that societally it's becoming more the norm, but we're really looking at the process, because it's an ongoing, it's ever-changing, it's ongoing. Even like Tony Robbins, when you listen to him talk, and he talks about having a monetary goal and hitting that goal. Usually people, once they hit a goal, that's not enough. They don't stop. It's not like they're like, I'm not going to create anymore. I got to play on stage, so I'm not going to do it again. No.
Exactly. Exactly.
You want it's more.
About, yeah, because we want to have purpose in life. We just don't want to have goals. Life isn't about goals. It's, you know, what a cliche. I am going to say it. It's the journey.
It is.
But it really is.
I mean, that's truly what it is. That's what it boils down to.
And you want to, you know, for me, you know, being creative it gives me a sense of purpose. And I think that's what we all kind of, one of the things we want to access and experience in human incarnation, you know, is that, you know, having children, I guess, maybe touches that. It's I don't know. It's like, yeah, you're still right. You do a goal, or you get a certain amount of money, and you go, well, that wasn't really it. You know, it's more
So the point of the idea of manufacturing, let's say you hit that goal, right? And like you said, you want to keep doing something, but you're like, oh, I hit that goal, and this is how I did it. So that's the formula, and it becomes a stagnant thing. And then you just try to keep redoing it. You keep trying to recycle it, right? You keep trying to recycle it to hit the goal again. And it loses, it doesn't have the same, it lands short every time. It's like it keeps landing too short. Because the big, the thing that's missing is the creative process. So, and I do think that part of like learning about the process is that desire to, you know, I'm going to repeat what I did. That was a success. So I'm just going to manufacture. I mean, we've all heard musicians who put out a fantastic album or even like movies, right? Like Ghostbusters, great movie. So they keep making it, but they just...
Well, that's so true about, film. I mean, you can think of artists that rewrite the same song over and over, but your movies in particular nowadays, they're just remaking what was once great until they remake it into what becomes one big giant zero.
I remember, so I loved Bridget Jones' Diary when it came out the first time. It was just fantastic. I loved it. I really enjoyed it. And then they made a second one. And I swear to God, all they did was, like, try to do... It was like they took the formula of the first one and laid it on top of a new plot line, and it was just like awful. It was just terrible.
Or like last night we were watching just channel flipping, and you know, of course, amongst the 9,000 channels, there wasn't already any to watch. We landed on Runaway Bride, and it took us a while to realize. We figured out, oh, wait a minute, this is a direct result of Pretty Woman. And, you know, they'd like littered it with all the same actors, you know, and they were trying to go for the same vibe, and it was so dismal, you know. It was just such a weak imitation. And, you know, not that I was the biggest fan of Pretty Woman
Pretty Woman.
But, you know, they did make something that had a thing. And here, you know, here's the copying version. No heart, no soul, same director. You're right. You're best to keep trying something new. You know, again, to take it back, like what I said, somebody like David Bowie, Sting at one point, you know, they all were always trying to do something, you know, kind of different each time.
Right. And,
you know, and I get that more than ever.
They had unpopular phases, too, that they had to work through because they did go outside the comfort zone of their audience. You know,
I mean, you know, the only people that seemed like they even had some crap, but, you know, the Beatles were always striving to make it different, you know, as I think the Stones kind of followed them. But the Beatles were the first in, you know, the popular music generation that comes out of my time that were like, everything we do is going to be a reach, you know, something that goes beyond the last thing we did. You hear it, you know, very quickly. They had a very short lifespan, and they were always, always reaching in a creative manner.
Exactly, and part of it was that they had to go through, and that is also, if you look at it, a microcosm of the macrocosm, where they had their awkward stage, right? Like they get, you look at the series of albums, they've got success, you know, new, awkward.
right.
You know, transitional, and it's like, and then success, it happens. I mean, even like, David Bowie, and forgive me for this, but he was Ziggy Stardust first, right? Wasn't that?
He was things even before Ziggy Stardust, but then Ziggy Stardust put him on the map, and then he became many things after that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Thin White Duke and all these other incarnations. And then his Berlin period, you know, which most people don't consider very successful commercially, but influenced so many people. So.
But there was a big, like, pushback when he stopped doing Ziggy Stardust, right? When he
moved
into his next phase.
Yeah.
They people felt betrayed almost. Like, where did you go?
Yeah. And nobody's been through this more and more sort of acutely than Bob Dylan. You know, became popular music icon, folk music. And then it was like, he instantly got, I can't be pigeonholed into this. So he does it electrically. Everybody hates him. They boo him off stage, you know, but he influences everybody by doing that. And then he gets so pigeonholed in that and gets so sick of that, he just, like, crashes, fakes a motorcycle accident or whatever people think, just, you know, checks out for a while and does other stuff. Always, always, always trying to, you know, I don't even, you know, I've read his autobiography, and I don't even know if he thinks of it in the way we talk about it as much as he just has to be that person, which is kind of a thing about artists. You know, we can talk about this from a conscious place, but in many ways, I think the words kind of just get in the way, and artists just are. You know, I think it's kind of a state of being.
Yeah. I agree with that.
And he's a good example of that.
I mean, as I look back on my life, I've started to coin myself as having a multi-potentiality because I've lived
so many. I like that.
Well, there's like a movement out there. They call them multi-potential personalities, where there are, it's a type of person where you're not just doing one thing. So you're maybe not even known for one thing. And I've definitely, I would say, lived that in my time. And I'm pretty sure I'll continue to do it, mostly because I have so many interests that really are a passion to me. Like, I need to get into all of them.
And the world is much more that kind of world now, with, you know, social media, or not even social media, but just the availability of stuff through the internet. You know, it seems like artists, everybody, you know, particularly like my daughter's generation, they just, there are so many people who don't do just one thing. You know, I forget who it was, she just went to see somebody at like Royce Hall, that I forget what her name is, but she does, you know, she does performance art, she does art, she's in film. She's real well known as an artist. She's also known for these movies she's done, and you know, that's, what do you call it, a
multi-potentiality.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Like that's it in real act, in real time. You know, like what that woman's doing. I think it's cool.
Yeah, and I think that it's actually truer to human nature. I mean, I think that need to reproduce or manufacture rather comes up when we are afraid to expand and change, because there is a point that you get where you're doing something. I mean, Jess, you know this too. You're doing something and you're going along and it's good, and then something comes up where you're just like, it's not enough anymore. And I think people get to that wall where it's not enough and they're afraid to expand. And so that's when they start going into manufacturing. I'll just keep doing what I'm doing.
That could very well be. You do see
right.
a lot of that, don't you? But I want to say it's a generational thing, but I don't think so. I think it's human nature. You know, hey, that worked. I'll take the easy path now. I'll relax. I guess it depends. You know, I guess it depends on your calling too. I think some of that stuff is out of our hands. I think it's, you know, again, it's the artist's journey, isn't it? It's discovering who you are. You either embrace that kind of thing of just like coasting, or you go, no, you know, I will not go quietly. I'm going to change, you know. Some people can do that. Some people can't. I don't know. I think it's divine. I think it comes from the light or something. I think
it also comes from recognizing, I mean, let's say your job is a salesperson, right? So basically, I'll go from my own experience. I used to work in fragrance and makeup. So let's say that's what it is. Every day you're selling perfume to somebody and you're ringing it up, and that's the job. So there,
right.
In that sense, you are sort of it's happening over and over again. But the real connection, the real creative part in that job is connecting to another human being. It's,
absolutely.
That's where
yeah.
you have a chance to make a difference in someone's life. It's
yeah.
not about the sale and the fragrance. It's about connecting to another person, and that's where you can get creative. That's where you can actually have an impact. You know, I mean, we've
yeah.
all had experiences where we were dealing with somebody, and we don't remember necessarily why, but we had a connection. You know, you go, like Starbucks, for instance. There's a person at Starbucks that I always look forward to seeing who works behind the counter, because she's always genuine in her connection.
That's so true. And I think, you know, having been somebody who's been, you know, being on stage and stuff, to me now at this point in my life, it's those one-on-ones that really become the valuable thing. You know, like if you're in the healing arts or something like that, or watching some of the stuff, you know, like, Julia, my wife's getting into, you know, you can just see the impact that you have when you do authentic, any kind of interaction with another human being. It's healing. You know, we heal each other that way. And to me, that's the stuff that's like super creative and really exciting at this point.
Absolutely. Well, that's the only real thing. we can get really deep into the spiritual part of it, but that's the juice of it, right? That's what we actually get
it
to
is.
Take with us.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why we all are artists, all basically living creative lives if we so choose. Regardless if it's, you know, being a farmer, a brain surgeon, you know, an actress, an entrepreneur, you know, you name it. Your life is your art.
That's the quote for today's show. Your life is your art. I love it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I know I got that from somebody else. I know. I think it came from, I know exactly where it came from. It came from a book called The Art of Living by Epictetus. I highly recommend that book to everybody. You guys should run out and get it if you can even find it anymore. Epictetus was a slave, a Greek slave, I believe, of the Romans, who wrote philosophy and became so popular that, like, he taught Alexander the Great and things like that. He was freed and and this book still lives on. It gets reprinted every so often, and it's all very simple things like that. You know, your art is your life is art, you know, things like that. So I highly recommend that book.
That sounds good.
Awesome.
I'm like, your life is your art. I love that. We're going to have to put that up on our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah.
I'll take full credit.
There you go.
I think you should. We're going to.
I think we're
going to
quote you on that. Yeah.
Oh God. I think you're done with me now.
No. Well, I can't believe it. It's almost that the show's almost come to an end. We've got less than 10 minutes left.
Oh, wow. That went really fast. That was that was like one of those 2.5 hour things that went in 5 minutes.
That we were doing the other
wow.
day? Yes, I know. Yeah. It's totally like that. It, I don't think we really have time to take callers, and I think our caller lost patience with us. I just, you guys were in such a great flow. I didn't want to interrupt. But yeah, they dropped off a while ago.
The caller was probably Julia just calling to bug us anyway.
I don't think so because I didn't recognize the number.
What's the area code?
512.
I don't know if anybody's in that area.
We're
going
to find you, caller. We're going to find you and put you on the air.
Yeah, but that's all right. It is what it is, and, you know, you guys had a really nice flow going. I didn't want to interrupt, so things flow in and flow out the way they're supposed to. You know, that's how I look at things, is that if there is a really nice balance going on, it's like, then allow it. Then let it go.
Yeah.
Let it flow. It's like there's good stuff coming out. It's like when things go off track, then it's like, whoa, wait a minute. But otherwise, you know, if things are just flowing really nicely, I don't see any reason to stop it. You know, it's just allow it. Just let it blossom. Let it grow. Let it bloom. You know, it's beautiful.
Yeah, you both are very good with it. Therese, I can tell you definitely, having been married to somebody who went through master's art school, I can tell you've been to art school. You definitely have the philosophy of it down. It's very familiar to me. And I mean that as a compliment. Seriously.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You don't, you know, I don't run in, well, of course, I'm in the music business where it's all run by liars, beggars, and thieves or whatever the
That's
quote
right.
is from Hunter Tom. But you know, I don't run into that much anymore. It's cool. It's great. It's to be admired.
I ran into it. I'm very lucky. I mean, Jess and I, we hit it off right away when we met because we definitely have that same philosophy going on.
Yeah, you definitely come from a deeply, spiritual bent with all this stuff, which is obviously where I come from too. You know,
yeah.
You kind of talk the same language in that sense. It's interesting to be with people that have that sort of outlook and foundation and then talk about art. That's another thing I don't get to do a whole lot, you know. Back when I was exposed to this stuff in the 70s, there was no spirituality talk. It was like, you know, fire up another joint.
Well, in the 70s, what's amazing about it, man, I'm about to go on a tangent and we're almost out of time. So I promise, Jess, I'll keep it reined in. But in the 70s, it was the cutting edge. That was the leading edge of thought is where we are now. In the 70s, it was like, whoa, this is weird stuff. You guys are talking like,
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. Like, there was barely Baba Ram Dass had come out, you know, in the late 60s and stuff. So the consciousness of that was just starting to spread, you know. I mean,
exactly.
Thank God it's in the world of indigos and people now that are just blasting forward. But, you know, it all was meant to happen with that kind of flow, wasn't it? But it's fun to get back to what I was saying. It's just fun to talk to you guys to all that same kind of intent and you know, same language.
Yeah.
That's definitely why we're doing this. I know that's why
Jeff
started it.
Yeah, you
thanks,
should.
Thanks, Jessica.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank
you're
you,
welcome.
Both of you. I quite enjoyed that.
Yeah, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did. We were so excited to have you on the show. We are so excited to have Julia on the show. I mean, it's really amazing to talk about this process and to talk about the expansion of creativity and how it can show up in every area of everyone's lives, not just an artist's life. You know, it can show up in everyday life. It can show up, you know, how someone makes your coffee at Starbucks, you know, in the barista.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it can show up, like Teresa was talking about, you know, the gal behind the counter at Starbucks just giving you tremendous customer service because she's in her moment awareness.
Are we going for a Post-it note / Starbucks sponsorship here?
Well, we talked about it, really. I mean, I think they should because Teresa and I talk about Starbucks all the time. So
yeah, it's great.
It's true.
I suddenly get a sense of like, you know, all those stories you see about how people work products into radio interviews and stuff. You get a sense of like how funny and kind of corny that probably was in the 50s and 60s.
Yes.
Well, it's genuine here. I mean, the Starbucks does feel like the mothership for
absolutely. Our whole society. I mean, you know, Julia is sitting at a Starbucks right now listening to this. And, you know, we talk about the art of making the barista has.
Yeah.
You know, my daughter has been that on and off living in Portland in San Francisco. It is an art. It's totally an art.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's one that's in the forefront of how we live in this kind of modern world, which is so coffee-centric. And I just think I've taken it back full circle to how you and Julia started, with coffee.
That's right. Because we did. When we did the show with Julia, we talked a lot about coffee.
I know.
So it totally came full circle.
Yeah, I was thinking, are you guys going to talk only about coffee? Because I'm listening to it, you know.
You were like, what? What is this?
Maybe.
Because we can.
Yeah, because you can. I know. If it's your show, we'll do what we want with it.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's essentially, and there's always, you know, we do that at the front and the tail of each show, when time permitting, of course, to just kind of warm it up, you know? It's like, it's just, for me, it always felt kind of weird to just jump right in and be like, you know, hey, here's the subject matter, we're going for it. You know, it's like, just, come on.
Back in the 80s, I had to do all the, like the, what do they call them? You know, the TV interview shows. You know, like
talk shows?
Talk shows.
Yeah.
And, you know, you had a segment, and it was so unbelievably bizarre. It was like the most non-form of communication I've ever experienced in my life. It was unbelievable. I remember sitting like at a chair looking at the host, who wasn't looking at me. He was looking at his producer getting direction while I'm answering questions going, who am I talking to? Why am I even talking? You know, and you're on air and you go like, I just don't even want to talk anymore. And it was so unbelievably bizarre doing those things. I don't see how people do. And this,
well, it's
you know,
a very,
point
it's
being,
a very
this is
plastic.
Much real. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very plastic kind of thing. You know, it's very like the mannequin just sitting there, like just regurgitating whatever the producer wants them to regurgitate.
I mean, you know, obviously there's moments like, you know, Fallon and Justin Timberlake, who obviously have a friendship and a rapport where it's like magic. But, you know, for the most part, when you don't really know the person, it's like, wow, it was crazy, crazy, kind of like artificial.
Well, you won't get artificial here, that's for sure.
No, that's, I brought that up by way of saying, you know, how nice this was. It's, again, it's, we all spoke the same language. It's very fun. Very fun.
Yay. Yay. And you know, it was just, it's so wonderful to have you on the show. And like you said, it's just, it's always great to speak with like-minded people that, you know, are in their process and are totally okay with being transparent and real about it and not having any kind of holding back or, you know, trying to put on airs or whatever, but just being real. I mean, like, well, here's how it is. Because it doesn't always look pretty.
It doesn't always,
you know, feel like it's working out. It doesn't, you know, there are times where it's just like you just hear crickets and it's like, wow, Okay.
Yeah. But that's life, isn't it? There's times.
Yeah,
like,
it really
what
is.
Am
I mean,
doing?
There's an ebb and a,
there's other times.
Yeah, there's, you know, an ebb and a flow, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we'll leave the audience with that because we are, the clock is ticking down. And Don, thank you once again for being a part of the show today. We really appreciate it.
Well, Jessica and Therese, thank you very much for both having me.
Yeah, it's
it was
been fantastic.
Pleasure.
Yes.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we will be back next week with another amazing episode. We'll have another special guest next week. So listen to us then. Have a fantastic day. Love and sparkles to all. Bye.
Bye.